A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been building that LoRa parking occupancy system, and he already wrestled with the 5-volt versus 12-volt question. Now he's asking about the next rung up, 24 volts and 48 volts DC. What hardware actually demands these voltages? How do you distribute power from AC mains or batteries at those levels? What specific components should you know about? What are the safety concerns? And what other DC rail standards exist that we haven't covered yet? It's basically a request for a field guide to middle voltage DC.
It's a great question because these two voltages sit in this weird no man's land between the hobbyist bench supply world and actual mains wiring. Most people building Arduino projects never touch them. But the moment you start doing anything industrial, anything with long cable runs, or anything that draws real power, 24 and 48 volts are suddenly everywhere.
The parking project is the perfect entry point for this. He's got 12-volt backup beepers and warning sensors. But what if he wanted to add a proper industrial proximity sensor 50 meters out of the entrance? 12 volts over that distance just evaporates.
Let's run the numbers. A 12-volt system pulling 5 amps over 50 meters of 18 AWG wire, that's a voltage drop of over 8 volts. You're losing 2/3 of your voltage before it even reaches the sensor. The thing won't even turn on. But a 48-volt system carrying the same power, now you're at 1.25 amps and the drop is only about 2 volts. 4% loss instead of 67%. That's not a minor improvement, that's the difference between a working system and a paperweight.
This is really about solving two problems at once, longer cable runs and higher power delivery, while staying under a regulatory boundary that most people don't even know exists.
Right, and that boundary is the key to why these specific voltages exist in the first place. Under IEC 62368-1 and UL 60950-1, 48 volts, DC is the highest voltage classified as extra low voltage, ELV. Stay at or below 48 volts, and you're exempt from a whole raft of regulatory requirements that kick in for mains voltage equipment. You don't need the same insulation, the same clearance distances, the same safety certifications. It's the sweet spot where you can deliver serious power without entering the regulatory regime of line voltage.
48 volts is basically the maximum voltage you can use while still being able to tell the inspector, "Don't worry about it."
That's the one-sentence summary, yes. And 24 volts is the industrial workhorse that sits comfortably below that. So let's map out what actually lives at each voltage. 24 volts DC is the standard for industrial control per IEC 61131-2. It's what programmable logic controllers expect on their digital inputs. It's what proximity sensors and pressure transmitters and flow meters run on. It's what solenoid valves and motor contactors and LED machine lighting use. Walk onto any factory floor and look inside the control cabinets. You'll see rows of 24-volt DIN rail power supplies feeding terminal blocks with blue and white with blue stripe wiring.
Why did 24 volts become the industrial standard specifically?
It's a Goldilocks voltage. High enough to drive relays and small motors and overcome noise in electrically harsh environments. Factories are full of variable frequency drives throwing off electromagnetic interference, but low enough to be touch safe under SELV, which is separated extra. Low voltage. You can put your fingers across 24 volts with dry skin and feel nothing. It's also high enough that a 10 to 30 meter cable run from the control cabinet to a sensor doesn't cause problematic voltage drop. And it divides nicely from common battery configurations. 2 12-volt lead acid batteries in series gives you 24 volts for backup.
What specific hardware are we talking about? Give me the shopping list.
The most common thing you'll encounter is the DIN rail power supply. The Meanwell LRS15024 is practically the default choice. 150 watts, 24 volts output, about the size of a paperback book, snaps onto a DIN rail. Meanwell sells over 1 million units a year across the LRS series. You wire AC mains into the top, and you get 24 volts DC out the bottom into terminal blocks. From there, you daisy chain to sensors, PLC input cards, relay coils, whatever. Then you've got the sensors themselves, inductive proximity sensors, the little threaded barrel things that detect metal. Those are almost universally 24 volts. Photoelectric sensors, ultrasonic distance sensors, pressure transmitters with 4 to 20 milliamp loops. They all expect 24 volt supply.
The 4 to 20 milliamp thing is worth flagging because that's how industrial sensors communicate. They don't output a voltage, they vary the current in the loop. A lot of hobbyists have never encountered that.
In the industrial world, current loops are preferred because they're immune to voltage drop over long cables. A 4 to 20 milliamp signal is the same at both ends regardless of wire resistance, but the sensor itself still needs a supply voltage to power its internal electronics, and that's almost always 24 volts DC. You also see 24 volts in LED strip lighting for commercial applications. The longer runs you can achieve versus 12 volt strips before you get visible dimming at the far end. And solenoid valves for pneumatics and hydraulics, motor drivers for small DC motors, even some 3D printer heated beds are moving to 24 volts because they can deliver more power without melting connectors.
That's the 24 volt world. What about 48?
48 volts owns two domains, telecom and power over Ethernet. In telecom, the standard is actually negative 48 volts DC with positive ground, and that negative sign isn't a typo. This is one of those historical decisions that's still with us a century later. Telephone exchanges have used negative 48 volts since the early days of the Bell system. The positive ground configuration, where the positive terminal of the battery bank is connected to earth, was chosen to reduce electrolytic corrosion on copper conductors and underground cables. If you have a negative voltage on the line relative to ground, any moisture that gets into the cable causes metal ions to migrate from the ground rod to the copper conductor, rather than the other way around. It's sacrificial protection. Your ground rods corrode instead of your expensive buried copper.
That is genuinely clever. A century-old corrosion hack baked into the voltage standard.
It persists today in every central office, every cell tower base station, every telecom rectifier shelf. If you walk into a telecom facility, you'll see racks of 48-volt rectifiers converting AC mains to negative 48 volts DC, feeding massive battery banks for backup. The batteries are typically 24 lead-acid cells in series. Each cell is nominally 2 volts, so 24 cells gives you 48 volts. During a power outage, the batteries carry the load seamlessly because the equipment is already running on DC.
Then there's PoE.
Power over Ethernet is where most people encounter 48 volts without realizing it. The IETE 802.3BT standard from 2018. That's PoE++, delivers up to 90 watts at nominally 48 volts over 4 twisted pairs of Ethernet cable. Some injectors push to 56 volts to compensate for cable drop, but the nominal system voltage is 48. This is what powers pan, tilt, zoom security cameras, video phones, thin clients, LED lighting fixtures, and increasingly building automation sensors. 100 meters of Cat6 cable carrying 48 volts at over an amp, that's real power delivery over data cabling, and it works because the higher voltage keeps the current manageable.
Let me do the math on that. A PoE++ camera drawing 60 watts at 48 volts is pulling 1.25 amps. If you tried to deliver 60 watts at 12 volts, you'd need 5 amps, and over 100 meters of 24 AWG, the voltage drop would be catastrophic.
More than 8 volts lost. The camera would see less than 4 volts. It's not even a question of efficiency at that point, the thing simply wouldn't power up. This is why PoE settled on 48 volts. It's the highest voltage that stays under the 60-volt DC-ELV boundary, which means standard RJ45 connectors and unshielded twisted pair can be used without the safety requirements that would apply at higher voltages.
We've got 24 volts for the factory floor and 48 volts for the server closet and the cell tower. What about actually getting these voltages from a wall outlet or a battery?
For 24 volts, the most common approach in industrial settings is the DIN rail power supply I mentioned. You bring AC mains into the panel through a circuit breaker into the supply, and you get 24 volts DC out. From there, you distribute via terminal blocks. For battery backup, you typically use two 12-volt batteries in series. either lead acid or LiFePO4 with a charger that maintains float voltage and an automatic transfer switch or diode, or arrangement so the batteries take over when AC fails.
The centralized versus distributed debate.
This is a real design decision. One big 24-volt supply in a central cabinet feeding everything means you only have one AC connection to worry about, one point of failure, and simpler wiring. But your cable runs can get long, and a short circuit anywhere can take down the whole system. Multiple smaller supplies distributed near the loads mean shorter cable runs, better fault isolation, but more AC wiring to route, and more points of maintenance. For most projects under a few hundred watts, centralized is simpler. For a factory with dozens of machines, distributed wins.
For 48 volts?
The telecom approach is a 48-volt rectifier shelf. These are purpose-built units that convert AC to negative 48 volts DC with battery charging capability. Companies like Eltec and Delta make these. For PoE, you use a PoE injector or a PoE switch. The switch handles the negotiation with the powered device to determine how much power to deliver. For off-grid solar, you'd use a solar charge controller configured for a 48-volt battery bank, typically four 12-volt batteries in series, or a single 48-volt LiFePO4 rack battery. These are becoming very common in the off-grid and backup power world because 48 volts at high capacity means lower current, thinner cables, and less heat.
The Meanwell 48-volt equivalent to that LRS series. What's the comparable unit?
The RPS 248 200 watts 48 volts out, similar form factor, about 30% more expensive. But the interesting thing is that the 48-volt DIN rail supply market is much smaller than 24 volts, because 48 volts in industrial settings usually comes from PoE infrastructure or dedicated telecom rectifiers rather than general-purpose DIN supplies.
If you're speccing a project, the ecosystem around each voltage is different. 24 volts has this enormous industrial components catalog, sensors, relays, terminal blocks, supplies. 48 volts has the networking and telecom ecosystem.
And that should drive your choice more than any abstract voltage preference. What hardware do you actually need to connect to?
Let's talk about safety, because I think there's a dangerous assumption that anything below mains voltage is harmless.
This is where people get complacent. 24 volts DC with dry skin, you'll feel nothing. The body's resistance is high enough that the current flowing is below the perception threshold. But get your hands wet or have a cut on your finger, and suddenly the skin resistance drops dramatically. A high current 24-volt supply, and some industrial units can deliver over 100 amps, can absolutely deliver a dangerous shock under those conditions. It's not the voltage that kills you. It's the current through your heart, and wet skin can drop your body resistance from hundreds of thousands of ohms to a few thousand.
48 volts is closer to the edge.
48 volts is the voltage where you start to feel it even with dry skin for some people. A tingle, maybe a mild zap. With wet hands, it can be a painful shock. There's a reason it's the ELV ceiling. The standards bodies determine that below 60 volts DC, the risk of fibrillation under normal conditions is acceptably low, but it's not zero. And with high capacitance sources, think a large battery bank with thousands of amp hours behind it, the available fault current is enormous.
Which brings us to fusing.
This is a gotcha that trips up people coming from the AC world. AC-rated fuses and circuit breakers may not safely interrupt a DC fault, especially at 48 volts. The problem is arc extinction. With AC, the current crosses 0 100 or 120 times per second, and the arc naturally extinguishes at the zero crossing. With DC, the arc is continuous. A 48-volt DC arc is harder to quench than a 24-volt one, and an AC-rated breaker might just sit there arcing while your wiring melts. You need DC-rated overcurrent protection, fuses or breakers specifically tested and labeled for the DC voltage you're using.
I've seen photos of what happens when someone uses an AC breaker on a DC battery bank. It's not subtle.
The breaker welds itself closed, or the arc sustains until something else fails catastrophically. For a 48-volt battery bank, you want fuses rated for at least the full battery voltage, and ideally with a high interrupt rating, 10,000 amps or more, because lithium batteries can deliver staggering short-circuit currents.
What about arc flash? That's usually a mains voltage concern.
At 48 volts, arc flash risk is low, but not zero. If you have a large battery bank with low internal resistance, Lithium iron phosphate packs can have internal resistance in the single-digit milliohms, and you accidentally short the terminals with a tool, you can get an arc that vaporizes metal. It won't be the explosive arc flash you'd see at 480 volts, but it can still cause burns and eye damage. Treat 48-volt battery banks with respect.
The safety summary. 24 volts is benign under most conditions, but not all. 48 volts demands real caution, and both require DC-rated protection.
That's it. And one more thing. Grounding. 24-volt industrial systems almost universally use negative ground. The negative terminal of the supply is bonded to earth. 48-volt telecom uses positive ground for the corrosion reason we discussed. If you're mixing equipment from both worlds, you need to be aware of this. Connecting a negative grounded 24-volt device to a positive grounded 48-volt system without isolation will create a dead short through the ground path.
That's the kind of mistake you make exactly once.
Then you spend a week debugging why everything is fried.
Let's zoom out. Daniel also asked about other DC rail standards we haven't covered. We've talked 5 volts, 12 volts, 24, 48. What else is out there that someone building electronics should know about?
Let me do a rapid tour. 3.3 volts. This is the logic level for most modern microcontrollers, FPGAs, and SDRAM. It replaced 5 volts as the dominant digital logic voltage because smaller transistor geometries can't handle 5 volts. Below that, you've got 1.8 volts, 1.2 volts, and even 0.9 volts. These are core voltages for modern CPUs and GPUs. The voltage is tiny, but the current is enormous. A high-end GPU can draw hundreds of amps at less than 1 volt. The regulation has to be incredibly tight, within a few percent, because at those voltages, even a small drop causes instability.
The opposite end of the spectrum from what we've been discussing? Ultra-low voltage, ultra-high current.
Then you've got plus and minus 15 volts. This is the classic analog op-amp supply. Precision instrumentation, audio equipment, analog signal processing. The split rail gives you a signal swing that can go both positive and negative relative to ground, which is essential for AC signals. 5 volts is still everywhere. USB legacy, logic and older systems, single board computers like the Raspberry Pi. 12 volts is automotive, PC power supplies, and Daniel's parking project. 56 volts shows up in some PoE injectors that boost the voltage to compensate for cable drop. It's still within the 60-volt ELV ceiling, but gives more headroom.
Then there's the one that surprised me when I first heard about it. 380 volts DC.
This is the emerging standard for data center power distribution under IEC 62040-5-1. The idea is that instead of distributing 48 volts to server racks and converting down at each rack, you distribute 380 volts DC, which is roughly the rectified equivalent of 277 volts AC, and convert down at the server power supply. You save 2-3% in conversion losses compared to 48-volt distribution, which doesn't sound like much until you realize a hyperscale data center might draw 100 megawatts. 3% of 100 megawatts is 3 megawatts. That's real money and real cooling load.
It's DC end-to-end. No AC rectification stage at each rack.
The servers still need their internal DC-DC converters to step down to the various voltages they use, but you eliminate the AC to DC rectification stage that would otherwise be in every power supply. The trade-off is that 380 volts DC requires completely different safety practices. It's well above ELV, so you need arc flash protection, insulated tools, different connector standards. It's not something a hobbyist is going to touch, but it's where the industry is heading for high-density computing.
We've got this whole landscape from 0.9 volts to 380 volts DC. But for someone like Daniel building a real project, the decision usually comes down to 12, 24, or 48.
I'd argue there's a decision framework here. First, look at your cable runs. If anything is over 30 meters, 48 volts is the clear winner. The voltage drop math is unforgiving. A 48-volt system carrying 5 amps over 50 meters of 18 AWG drops about 2 volts, or 4.2%. A 24-volt system at 10 amps, same power, over the same cable drops about 4 volts, or 16.7%. That's the difference between a sensor that works and one that's flaky.
The second factor?
Above about 100 watts, 48 volts starts making more sense because the lower current means less. I2R loss, thinner cables, and less heat at connectors. Below 50 watts, 24 volts is perfectly fine and gives you access to that huge industrial sensor ecosystem. Third factor, what hardware do you actually need? If you're using industrial proximity sensors and PLCs, you're in the 24-volt world whether you like it or not. If you're powering PoE cameras and networking gear, you're at 48 volts. 24 volts maps nicely to two 12-volt batteries in series, automotive, marine, common lead acid. 48 volts maps to four 12-volt batteries or dedicated 48-volt lithium racks, which are becoming standard in solar and telecom. If you're doing an off-grid solar system, 48 volts is increasingly the default because the higher voltage means lower current from the panels to the charge controller.
One thing you mentioned earlier, the efficiency crossover. Higher voltage means lower I2R losses, but higher switching losses in DC, DC converters. Where's the sweet spot?
For most DC-DC converter topologies, the crossover is around 48 volts. Below that, the conduction losses dominate. Above that, the switching losses. The energy lost every time the MOSFET turns on and off start to eat into your gains. This is one reason 48 volts became the telecom standard. It's roughly the point where the efficiency curve peaks for the converter technology of the era, and it stayed there because the physics hasn't changed.
48 volts isn't just a regulatory sweet spot. It's also an efficiency sweet spot.
It's one of those rare cases where regulation and physics align. The ELV ceiling at 60 volts DC, the efficiency optimum around 48 volts, and the corrosion chemistry that favors positive ground, they all point to the same number. It's almost elegant.
Until you accidentally connect a negative ground device to a positive ground bus and let the smoke out.
Engineering elegance always has a trapdoor somewhere.
Let's bring this back to Daniel's parking project. He's got 12 volts for his backup beepers and warning sensors. If he wanted to add 24-volt industrial sensors, say, a proper inductive loop detector for vehicle presence, what's the cleanest way to do that?
He has two good options. One is a dual output supply, like the Meanwell RD65A, which gives you both 5 and 12 volts from a single AC input. But for 12 and 24, he'd want something like the Meanwell RD-85, that's 85 watts with dual outputs. Or he could use separate DIN supplies, 112 volt, 124 volt, fed from the same AC circuit. The dual rail approach is cleaner than trying to step 12 up to 24 or 24 down to 12 for everything, because every conversion stage costs you efficiency and adds failure points.
If he wants to run a PoE camera at the far end of the parking lot,
that's where 48-volt PoE shines. A single Cat6 cable carrying both data and power, 100 meters no problem. He'd need a PoE switch or injector and a PoE splitter at the camera end if the camera doesn't natively support PoE. The splitter takes 48 volts in and gives you the voltage the camera actually needs, often 12 volts or 5 volts, plus Ethernet data.
His system could end up being a hybrid. 12 volts for the short-range beepers and sensors, 24 volts for industrial detection, 48-volt PoE for the far-end camera, all from one AC feed, with appropriate supplies for each rail.
That's actually a very common real-world architecture. Nobody says you have to pick one voltage. The key is knowing what each rail is good at and matching the hardware to the voltage that makes sense for its location and power requirement.
What about connectors? That's a practical detail that bites people.
24-volt industrial uses? M12 circular connectors a lot. They're rugged, IP-rated, and standardized for sensor connections. Terminal blocks with screw or spring clamps are also universal. For 48-volt PoE, it's RJ45 with integrated magnetics. The Ethernet connector handles both data and power. For 48-volt DC distribution outside of PoE, you'll see Anderson power pole connectors, which are genderless and rated for high current or terminal blocks with higher voltage ratings. The key thing, don't use audio connectors or barrel jacks for 48 volts. They're not rated for it, and the arc when you unplug under load can damage the connector.
The barrel jack arcing problem is something I've seen people discover the hard way.
Unplugging a 48-volt DC load from a barrel jack draws an arc between the pin and the sleeve as they separate. With AC, the arc extinguishes at the zero crossing. With DC, it just keeps going until the gap is wide enough. Over time, this pits the contacts, increases resistance, and eventually the connector fails, sometimes melting in the process. DC-rated connectors have features to manage this, like faster separation or arc-quenching designs.
The connector choice is part of the safety design, not just a convenience.
And that ties back to the DC fuse issue we mentioned. A system is only as safe as its weakest component. You can have the best power supply in the world, but if you fuse it with an AC-rated breaker and use barrel jacks not rated for DC, you've built a fire hazard.
Let's hit a few misconceptions before we wrap up. One I hear a lot. 24 and 48 volts are interchangeable. Just use a different power supply.
The connectors are different, the fusing requirements are different, the grounding conventions are different, remember positive ground in telecom, and the hardware ecosystem is different. You can't just swap a 48-volt supply into a 24-volt system and expect it to work. The sensors won't accept the voltage, the fuses won't be rated correctly, and if the system was designed for negative ground and you connect a positive ground telecom rectifier, you've got a short.
Another one, 48 volts is completely safe to touch.
Dry skin, casual contact, you'll probably feel nothing or a mild tingle. But wet conditions, broken skin, or a large contact area change the equation. And from a high-capacity battery bank, the available fault current is terrifying. Treat 48 volts with the same respect you'd give mains voltage in terms of not working on it live, using insulated tools, and making sure overcurrent protection is properly sized.
The third one, higher voltage always means higher efficiency.
True for distribution losses, I squared R goes down as voltage goes up for the same power, but false at the system level because converter switching losses increase with voltage. The crossover is around 48 volts for most topologies. Above that, the gains from lower current are offset by the increased switching losses. This is why 380-volt DC data center distribution is only worth it at very high power levels where the distribution losses dominate.
All of that theory is great, but let's bring it back to something someone can use next week. What are the actionable takeaways?
First, calculate your voltage drop budget before you choose a voltage. The formula is straightforward. Voltage drop equals 2 times the cable length, times the current, times the resistance per meter of your wire gauge. If the drop exceeds 5% of your nominal voltage, step up to the next standard voltage, 12 to 24, 24 to 48. This one calculation at the start of a project can save you from a system that works on the bench and fails in the field.
There are online calculators that make this trivial.
Plenty of them. Second takeaway, always use DC-rated fuses and breakers for 24 and 48-volt circuits. Look for the DC voltage rating on the component. It'll usually say something like 125 volts, AC 48 volts, DC, or similar. If it only has an AC rating, don't use it on DC. The extra cost of a proper DC-rated fuse is nothing compared to the cost of a fire.
The third one. This is specific to Daniel's project, but applies generally. Consider a dual-rail approach rather than forcing everything to one voltage.
If you've got 12-volt beepers and 24-volt sensors, run both rails from a dual output supply or separate supplies on the same AC circuit. Don't try to step 12 up to 24 with a boost converter for high-power loads. It's inefficient and adds a failure point. And don't try to run everything at 12 volts if you've got long cable runs. The voltage drop will bite you. Match the voltage to the load and the distance.
For most new projects, the default is 24 volts if you need industrial sensors and your runs are under 30 meters, 48 volts if you need high power or long cables, 12 volts if you're in the automotive or hobbyist ecosystem, and everything is within a few meters.
That's the heuristic. And 5 volts if you're powering microcontrollers and logic, but you already knew that.
One open question before we close. USB-C PD now goes up to 48 volts at 240 watts, and we've got 380-volt DC creeping into data centers. Do 24 and 48 volts remain distinct standards, or do they converge over the next decade?
I think 48 volts becomes the universal high-power DC standard, and 24 volts remains the industrial sensor voltage. The reason is ecosystem lock-in. There are millions of 24-volt sensors and PLCs installed worldwide, and nobody is going to retrofit them. But for new designs where higher power is needed, mild hybrid vehicles, data center racks, off-grid power systems, 48 volts is becoming the default. The automotive industry's move to 48-volt mild hybrid systems is a huge driver, and USB-C PD at 48 volts means consumer electronics will increasingly speak that voltage too.
24 volts is the past and present of industrial automation. 48 volts is the future of everything else.
I'd put it that way, and the smart move for anyone building systems today is to be comfortable with both.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1780s, Roman provincial road maintenance in Britannia was funded by a mandatory labor tax called the corvée. But the actual work was so consistently shirked that local governors began paying citizens to not show up, a de facto bribe to avoid the administrative nightmare of forcing them, effectively inverting the tax into a welfare program for the idle.
The Romans invented paying people to do nothing, truly ahead of their time.
A lot to sit with.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. If you enjoyed this, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. We'll be back next week with whatever Daniel throws at us.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.